The light faded. The woman brought her a plate of stew that smelled somewhat like urine, and a jug that smelled of the liquor it usually held, but now it had only water. The woman did not bother to speak, only motioning her to stay in back of the cage while she set the food inside. After the long and rough day John had had, the stew did not taste nearly as bad as it might have. She ate and drank. Then she became aware of the need to relieve herself. Would they let her out at least to urinate? But if they did, they would surely watch her, and that would be extremely awkward. If she tried to stand and do it like a man, she'd only get her pantaloons soaked, and they'd know. But if she didn't get out pretty soon, she would have to soil herself right here in the cage. She pondered and decided on a course that had a better than even chance of success.
Hey, I gotta poop.
Oh, just stand up and do it through the slats.
Not in my house. It stinks bad enough already.
Then you take him out.
I don't want no woman watching me. What do you think I am?
Oh, she's seen it before. We sure ain't gonna let you loose outside.
The woman got up. She fetched a length of rope from a peg on the wall.
He won't be loose.
Marta came and opened the cage door.
Here, put your head in this.
John obediently put her head forward and the noose slipped over. The woman tightened it just enough to be snug on the neck.
You try to run. You know how fast this'll tighten.
I know.
John climbed carefully out of the cage and walked across the room to the door. It was getting dark outside. The woman showed the way to a rotten log some distance from the house. There was a trench beyond it, and the smell made clear its purpose. Without a word, John pulled down her pantaloons just enough and stuck her bottom out over the trench. She put one hand down in front as if to direct the aim of a member there. The dusk and the hand effectively concealed that region of her body. Fortunately, she did have solid as well as liquid wastes to deposit, so the woman had no reason to be suspicious. Men did squat when they had to do both. The woman proffered something white. It was paper, a fragment of some old wrapper. John took it and used it, then quickly pulled up her pantaloons as if embarrassed that any male anatomy might show before a woman. It would have been far more awkward if the highwayman had come with her, for then she could not have justified her concealment. They returned to the house. She had made it. They had thought she might try to escape, but she had just wanted to get her business done without destroying her masquerade. Escape had to wait on a better opportunity. Back in the cage, she lay down on the smelly blanket and peered out through the cracks in back at the canyon wall outside. By twisting her head to the side, she could just manage to see some stars. When the highwayman and his wife slept, she could get up and pry her way out and escape, if she could do it silently. But when she slept, she was so tired that she never woke till morning. Her chance to escape had passed. She would be stuck with her luck in the boy mart. Kelvin recovered his sword from the ditch, sheathed it, and began what he knew was going to be a long walk. The war horse's hooves had made plenty of tracks, but the road got harder ahead and the tracks vanished. It was hot, and it was uncomfortable, and his head hurt. He would have to have help. There was no way he could rescue John by himself, no way that he could even hope to find the highwayman. He had to get to Franklin. That was where the boy mart was. The highwayman had said he would sell her. And he wouldn't ride to some more distant market when Franklin was convenient, Kelvin hoped. But when he did get there, what could he do but get himself arrested and sold along with his brother? There had to be help somewhere. Guardsmen were not to be trusted since the start of the reign of Queen Zoanna, but once they had been good and dependable defenders of the land. Things had been different back before his father's time. His father, his natural father, John Knight, had run afoul of the Queen in some way, and that had led perhaps to his death. Kelvin had a morbid curiosity about that, but it wasn't something his mother liked to talk about. He would have to go to the guardsmen's barracks outside Franklin and tell about the highwayman and ask and hope. He would have to be very polite and servile, because otherwise he would be seen as a runaway and a vagrant and taken to the boy mart as merchandise. The bandit probably had a shack out in the Sadlands. He would take John there and then tomorrow take her to the boy market. There John would be sold to work at something hard and degrading and unworthy of her sharp brain, if she managed to conceal her sex. That was a special problem, and Kelvin didn't know what complications it would lead to. But it made it all the more urgent that she be rescued promptly. He thought of John hiding her nature and being forced to work at hard labor until she was 25 years old. Not all boys survived that long, and John would have twice as much trouble. The rich merchants and plantation owners and shipping company masters supported the queen in order to keep the custom alive so they could have cheap labor. Other lands had long since rid themselves of every type of slavery except that of matrimony. Rudd was a fit land for a hero of prophecy to start. He didn't feel like a hero. Not now that he was out of dragon country, and not even before. It was all nonsense, this prophecy. His father had said as much, and he had believed. Many, many times he had believed in the invalidity of the prophecy, despite his mother's certainty. But he had slain the dragon. A perverse thought came.
Ugh, luck. Just dumb luck.
If there hadn't been that haven in the debris pile, that rock and that stout branch, a deaf donkey. But how, then, do you think prophecy works? It's the stacking of fortune cards, the loading of prediction dice. One has a little extra bonus in the game folks call life.
No.
He didn't like the way his thoughts were going. It must have been that blow the bandit had given him. That and the heat. It was pointless to argue with himself. Ahead were the two sentinel rocks flanking the road, like waiting highwaymen. Such imagery came readily now. Straight ahead were the Sadlands, while Dragon Country was back the way he had come, and the road to Franklin was to the right and across the bridge. He had no choice but to go right. It was almost as if it had been prophesied. The appleberry bushes by the bridge parted just as he got there, and a large, woolly, red-coated bearver waddled out. The animal looked at him, sniffed, caught the scent of dragon's blood, and turned and ran. If he had been forced to face the bearver in a bad mood with only this old sword, he knew he would have ended up as the bearver's meat.
That's no way for a hero to think.
Who's a hero?
I'm a hero. Shut up!
He had to keep walking even though he was tired and depressed and everything seemed crazy and hopeless. His tongue felt swollen and his head whirled so that everything shimmered in the heat haze. He had to go under the bridge and wash his face and get a drink. His legs felt like cooked lengths of pasta stalk, wobbly and weak. Slowly, he made his way down to the water. He knelt on the muddy bank and looked at his reflection. He had dirt all over his clothes and all over his face. He scooped up some of the water and drank. It was muddy tasting, but very cold, like snow from the high mountaintops. His hands tingled and hurt from their contact with the cold. If only he had some money. If only... He stripped off his clothes, sloshed them in the river, tossed them aside, and then went to work on himself. Without soap, it was difficult, but he scrubbed himself with his wadded-up clothing and managed to get some of the dirt off each. The dragon's blood had accumulated on his boots and was caked and noisome. That was the hardest struggle. When he was done, he was shivering blue with welts and bruises showing up much better now that their covering of grime was gone. But at least he didn't look as if he had just wallowed in a mud hole and rolled around in dragon filth. As he was redonning his garments, something scratched his right hand. He looked in the hip pocket of his pantaloons and found a single golden scale. It was the first dragon scale John had found. He had slipped it into the pocket and forgotten it.
So at least I can't be arrested for vagrancy. Not as long as I hold that.
Luck.
Stacked cards, weighted dice. He had to get on to Franklin. As he started back up the bank, he spied a battered plant. It was a shade-blooming spice rose. Those were extremely rare and valuable, because the scent of their blooms was supposed to send the one who sniffed one into a few minutes of utter ecstasy. There was a rose on a broken stem. Kelvin lifted the flower. It had a very pleasant aroma, but it didn't transport him. Either the story of the power of a spice rose was exaggerated, or he was immune to it. As a round ear, he had a number of attributes that differed from those of point ears, including his facility with plants. This could be another example. Too bad he couldn't heal the trampled plant, but his magic, if such it was limited to facilitating health in a living plant. He could not restore a dead one. He tucked the rose into a pocket where the direct sunlight would not touch it and destroy it, and resumed his climb. As he reached the road again, he felt better than at any time since the highwayman rode off and left them in the ditch. Maybe the spice rose had buoyed him. As he started walking, he wished that he had his mandajo. He didn't feel like playing or singing, and yet it would be company. Alas, the highwayman had it, along with the donkey and the gold and his sister. Ascorbut chattered at him from an oapple tree. He looked up at the fuzzy, short-tailed rodent and thought how good the last one had tasted. John had been responsible for that. John and her sling. Well, at least he could eat one of the fruits of the tree. Oh, apples weren't the most luscious fruits, but he could make do. He reached up and put his hand on a low-hanging one.
You are the apple of my eye. I long to eat your delicious substance. May I pluck you?
He tugged, and in a moment the tough stem let go. Like most fruiting trees, this one was subject to flattery. Calvin knew his father would have said it was superstition, that he just knew how to pick the ripe ones, but the fact was that any fruit Calvin touched tended to ripen and sweeten when he praised it, and to turn sour when he condemned it. His mother had the same ability, and she had no hesitation about calling it magic. He plodded on, step by step, eating the apple, trying harder and harder to think that the prophecy his mother so firmly believed in would enable him to win out, to believe that his mother was correct. After all, if she was right about one thing, why not another? After an eternity on the road, he brushed sweat from his eyes and saw the grimy barracks building ahead. He dreaded what was likely to happen there, but he knew he had to do it. He was, after all, supposed to be some kind of hero.
Ho, ho, ho! Took your little brother, did he? Said he'd take him to market, did he?
The burly guardsman clasped his sides. Calvin looked at this blue and gold uniformed representative of law and order. He was at the guardhouse outside the village of Franklin. Beyond the guardsman were others, similarly uniformed, similarly slovenly. Open collars and dirty undershirts seemed to be the order of the day.
You do arrest highwaymen?
Certainly, my boy, certainly. Every now and then, when one of them doesn't divide the loot. Tell me, boy, was anything of value taken? Besides that valuable brother of yours.
Our donkey, sir. We paid out 2 rudnas in good coin for him. He's bob-tailed and he's deaf. Stone deaf, sir, though we didn't know that when we bought him.
Deaf? A deaf donkey? A skinny boy to act as a scullery and a stable boy. A skinny boy and a deaf and stone donkey?
Carpenter! The next time you bray like that, you'll do a donkey's work! You hear?
I hear ye, Sarge.
Sergeant! Sergeant, you impudent jackass!
Sergeant!
Kelvin looked from private to sergeant and then about the small guardhouse. Only one face, that of a young guardsman, only a couple of years older than Kelvin, showed any sign of sympathy. He thought he would prefer to talk to this man, but the sergeant was staring straight into his face.
You know the consequences of lying to a Queen's guardsman, don't you, boy?
Yes, sir.
I can hang you, I'll cut off your ears, I'll cut off anything else I fancy. A guardsman must not be lied to, especially by scum. You understand?
Yes, sir.
What did this highwayman look like, boy?
He wore black, and he had a black horse.
That describes half the highwayman in Rudd. What else?
A scar. From here...
His finger traced a line on his face.
To here.
This scar. Was it deep red?
Yes, sir.
Cheeky Jack. That rascal owes me a drink of 6. I thought he moved out to the plains, and here he is, plying his trade just like he's been since the day he left the barracks.
Carpenter, stick out your tongue.
What?
Stick out your fool tongue. It's flapping too much. I believe I should shorten it.
No, 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 Sergeant, please.
Are you refusing a direct order?
No.
Stick out your tongue.
Carpenter's tongue protruded from his bulbous lips. The sergeant's sword rose and flicked, its point just lightly pricking the man's tongue. A single drop of blood fell to the unswept floor of the barracks.
Let that be a reminder. Now you, get out.
Sir?
Out.
But this Cheeky Jack, will you catch him?
Out. I don't want to see your baby face again. Ever. And boy, if I find you've lied to me, whatever happens to your brother will be nothing compared to what I'll see happens to you. You understand me, boy?
Yes.
Then get!
Kelvin ran outside, looking wildly around at the dusty road and the collection of houses and shops on the adjoining street. There was no help anywhere, for him or for John. At the end of the street was a shade tree and a bench, empty for the moment. He made for it, reached it, and sank down on it.
Ah, there you are. I was hoping I'd catch you.
Kelvin rose, ready to run, but it was the young guardsman he had seen watching him. The man was empty-handed and looked human. Of course, after Carpenter and that sergeant, anyone would look human.
Now, stay there. Now, pretend I'm chewing you out for sitting where only guardsmen are allowed to sit. It's not a law, but the officers have made it one. Some, such as Carpenter, would beat you for sitting here. We're not all like that. The trouble is, with such a Sergeant Clough, we have to pretend to be. If I didn't, well, then I'd get beaten. Or worse. I'd like to help you, but I'm not sure I can. Now you go into Windmill Square and find my father. He's got the biggest, widest shoulders of any man you ever saw. He looks like me, but heavier and older, with graying hair. You talk to him. His name's Morvin Crumb. No, I'm Lester Crumb. Friends call us More and Less Crumb. Crumb's from the same loaf.
I'm Kelvin Knight Hackleberry. Friends call me Kel.
Knight. What an interesting name. Wonder if it means anything prophecy-wise. Well, go to Windmill Square. Just follow that side street, wait by the speaker's platform, and eventually my father will show. Now, he's a rough man, and stern, but you'll like him. Most people like more Crumb.
Oh, I thank you.
You just do it, Kelvin Knight Hackleberry. Maybe, just maybe, father can help you recover your brother.
Kelvin sat on a bench in the park called Windmill Square and listened to his growling stomach. He had to wait here until more Crumb showed up. If he left even for a few minutes, he might miss the man. He gazed up into the peanut tree nearby. Maybe there would be some peanuts. They were not his first choice of food because of the extreme difficulty in cracking them open, but they would certainly do for now. And the tree was close enough to the bench so that he could watch it from there. This was the remnant of a once magnificent tree, with thickly spreading foliage to the sides, but a sadly marred trunk. Lightning had wounded it, leaving an oozing cleft. As a gust of wind moved the leaves about, he saw into that cleft. There was something wedged in it that reflected a glint as the sunlight briefly penetrated to it.
Huh.
Curious, as well as hungry, Kelvin got up and walked to the tree. None of the people in the vicinity paid him any attention. The ground beneath it was a tangle of weeds and briars. No one had come here recently. But there, at about twice the height of a man, was the wedged object. It seemed to be some kind of heavy glove with metallic reinforcements. Where there was one glove, there might be a pair, and gloves could always be useful. Kelvin suppressed his fatigue and set about climbing the tree to reach it. The bark was rough, so that he found finger holds and toe holds. He hauled himself up and, in due course, reached the glove. He took hold of it and hauled it out of its cleft. It was more than a glove. It was a massive gauntlet, fashioned of good quality dragon leather with reinforced studs of silver metal across the knuckles. That was what had reflected the gleam. This must have been one expensive piece of equipment when new. He felt around for the companion glove, but couldn't find it. He climbed higher and inspected this entire part of the tree, but there was nothing. Just this single gauntlet for the left hand. How strange that it should have been left here alone. Still, half a pair was better than none. Might as well use it. He shook it out to free it of whatever bugs might have taken up residence inside and slipped it on his hand. The thing fit marvelously well. It was as though it had been made to his measure. It seemed about time that something went his way.
Yeah.
He climbed down. His right hand felt the abrading roughness of the bark, but his left hand was quite comfortable. The glove fingers gripped with surprising accuracy and force, greatly facilitating his descent. His hand felt as if it had infinite power. He reached the base. Now he observed the bee nuts scattered on the ground, dropped by the tree. Those should be edible. Maybe he could, after all, crack some open and get a meal of sorts. He picked one up and brought it to his mouth. His teeth clamped on the hard shell and bore down, but it would not give. This nut was too tough for him. He would have to bash it open with a rock. Naturally, there were no rocks around. No big sticks either. What he really needed was a nutcracker. He held the nut between the thumb and forefinger of the gauntlet and squeezed, wishing it could be that easy. Kevin did a double take. Oh, he had probably happened on a flaw, catching it just right. He picked out the meat and put it in his mouth. Had he picked it fresh from the tree, he could have charmed it into a better taste, but the fallen nuts were beyond his power to improve. However, he was not about to climb way up to the tips of the bearing branches to reach growing nuts. He would probably fall and break his neck if he tried. He picked up another and tried it similarly between the gauntlet's thumb and forefinger. This one cracked open as readily as the first. Good enough. He tried the third with his right hand. He got nowhere. He tried it with a gauntlet, and it opened as if its shell were made of paper. Now this was interesting. He experimented and verified that the glove had power that the rest of him lacked. When he linked his right hand to the gauntleted left and squeezed carefully, his right soon was hurting, while his left never felt the pressure. Apparently, the glove amplified the power of any motion his fingers made, enormously. He reached out to grip the tough bark of the tree. He squeezed, and the bark crumbled. He put several nuts in the glove and squeezed hard, and they compressed so quickly and thoroughly that juice spurted. What remained when he opened his hand was just dry mash. Kelvin gathered as many bee nuts as he could hold and returned to the bench. There he methodically cracked them open and ate them, feeling steadily better as his stomach got back into business. What a discovery this gauntlet was! How strange that it had remained lodged in that cleft and nobody else had noticed it, or, if they had, bothered to fetch it down.
Young man!
The man facing him had the reddest countenance he had ever seen. His shoulders were as wide as the rest of him, and the rest of him was as broad as the back of a war horse. His ears shone pinkly at the lobes and had little tufts of dark hair at their tips.
Morven Crumb?
That's right, youngster. And you are?
Kelvin Knight Hackleberry. Your son said...
Yes, I know.
Morven brushed a pile of bee-nut shells from the bench and sat down beside him.
We've had a small group of vigilantes here in Franklin. Crumb's Raiders, we call ourselves. Now and then, we can help someone, but it all depends on who they are and how bad they deserve help. What's your loss?
My sister. A highwayman named Cheeky Jack has her, and...
A girl? How old is she?
14. Oh, but she...
Then it is already too late to help her. Don't you know what outlaws, and guardsmen too for that matter, do to girls that age?
Yes, but she's masquerading as a boy. So with luck, Cheeky Jack doesn't know.
So, you two aren't entirely naive about traveling then?
Not entirely. But we still got ourselves into real trouble. If that outlaw finds out...
Better hope he doesn't. Then at least she has a chance.
He said he was taking her to...
Yes, yes. The highwayman stalk the boy mart all the time. We've had little luck in preventing it.
Then...
Maybe. If Les can help. He's a good lad. Too good for the likes of the Queen's guards.
Then why...
Listen, Hackleberry, we may not have much time. The speaker up there on the platform has been trying to stir up trouble. He's a windbag. None of us noticed what he was saying until we started noticing the crowd. He's got about 12 listeners besides several raiders, and that's too many.
I don't see any guardsmen.
They come disguised. And there are informers.
Do you really think?
Any moment. That's why we have to leave. Now!
A clatter at the end of the park caused them to turn. Three guardsmen, one of them Private Carpenter, another Sergeant Clough, were bearing down on the platform in the speaker.
You! Speaker! You're under arrest! And you, Crumb, and the boy, you're under arrest too!
Good people! None heard me speak today. I was but listening to the talk and enjoying the shade. There's no cause for my arrest.
None for mine either!
Boy, they mean to slay us. I'll fight them, but they're mean. That sergeant's fast. I want you to hold back and watch your chance. Maybe I can get one or two of them, and if I do, you get away. Here!
I need your help!
I need somebody's help. They must have followed you.
If I had a good sword!
Lad, this is nothing for a boy. This is something for a man. Get away if you can. Save yourself. And then maybe some other time you can save your sister. Or somebody's sister.
Kelvin picked up his old sword. He raised it in his right hand and the gauntlet on his left and tried to look as defiant and fierce as Crumb.
Now I'm armed?
Look at a fool! Thinks because his name is Knight, he's a warrior. You protected by magic, boy?
Gods! Hackleberry, that gauntlet! Where did you get it?
Found it in the beanut tree. It was in the wood where the lightning struck.
Lightning? Lightning! Gods! Hackleberry, off with your cap!
What?
Your stockle cap, man! Off with it!
Hesitantly, then defiantly, Kelvin reached for his cap. He pulled it off, feeling it yank at his ears.
A round ear. Could it be the round ear of prophecy come at last?
That's just a wild story. I'm no hero.
We'd better assume it's valid, because otherwise we're finished. The round ear of prophecy came to lead our fight.
But treason!
Good people, are you willing to live and let your children and grandchildren live under the rule of a tyrant? We've got a champion here, or the start of one. Think, act, now!
Suddenly, hands were raised and the three guardsmen were surrounded.
Back! 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 Or I'll split the lot of you!
But the man was given a hearty shove in the back and he stumbled forward.
Hackleberry, lad, I want you to take my sword.
But
Just take it, son. Don't think about it. Just think about your left arm and using it to protect yourself.
Kelvin feared his legs would go out from under him. They felt so rubbery. But he took Crumb's sword and let Crumb take his. Crumb looked at him and made a motion. Carpenter and the other guardsmen were suddenly grasped by willing hands. Only the sergeant remained free. Then, to Kelvin's astonishment and alarm, Crumb did an amazing thing.
You take him, Hackleberry!
What?
The sergeant here. Or would you prefer to battle all three?
At once?
Look how scared he is. He can't take me, gauntlet or no gauntlet.
Think, left hand, Hackleberry!
Kelvin hardly had time to think. As the sergeant's blade swished out, he raised the gauntlet in what he knew was a futile effort to stop him. With blinding speed, the gauntlet got between the sergeant's blade and Kelvin's otherwise unprotected face. He felt nothing but a slight tap on his wrist. Then the sergeant's blade rebounded. Kelvin looked at his intact left hand. That hand should have been lying on the ground. He raised that hand again as the sergeant drew back his blade for another strike. The blade struck forward. The gauntlet moved like a snake striking a bird. It caught the blade, then wrenched the sword expertly from the sergeant's hand. Kelvin, numbed by this occurrence, still managed to raise Crumb's sword, posing its blade in front of the man's throat.
Still don't believe it's his gauntlet, Sergeant.
Don't slay me!
Slay him, Hackleberry!
I can't!
He needs slaying. He would have slain you and me, and any other who got in his way. He enjoys slaying. He has no mercy and deserves none. You know that! Hackleberry, is it possible that you don't know the meaning of that gauntlet?
Kelvin shook his head. He had never felt more certain that he was unsure of anything.
Gods! What do they teach young'uns these days? It's a gauntlet once owned by Muvar the Magnificent, he who wrote the Book of Prophecy. You have heard of the book?
Of course!
And do you remember the story of his battle with Zatanas, Prince of Evil, Sorcerer, and Father of our Unwanted Queen?
They flew, according to the legend!
Then Muvar dropped his gauntlets. When they are found, Zatanas will be properly vanquished.
Now Kelvin remembered. There had been such a story in another section of the fable Charlaine had read to him. He had not made the connection before. Could this really be one of those fabled gauntlets?
According to legend?
Right. What else?
And the gauntlet great shall the tyrant take.
That's the scripture, lad.
The gauntlets are supposed to contain the souls of brave and powerful knights.
Right. With them, you cannot be defeated.
But I have only one.
A detail. Maybe both gauntlets were seeking you, and this is the one that found you. Now is the time for you to take command, to lead your people, to excise the sore on this our gentle land. Oh, to start with, what are you going to do about this?
Don't! I give him his life!
You what?
I give him his life if he...
Hackleberry, hero or no hero, you've got rocks in your fool head.
Crumb took back his sword with a sudden grab. Then, as the sergeant made a triumphant half-leap with an extended knife, Crumb swiftly and expertly deprived him of his head.
You have an awful lot to learn about being a hero.
John looked around at the circle of boys. Some were older than she was, and some were her own age, but she looked younger because she was not a boy. How long could she maintain her masquerade? Here there seemed to be no private place for natural functions, and if they required the boys to strip... The boys clustered around her the moment the guards closed the door and departed. She had only a moment to look around, noting the small barred windows. There were three pails in the corners. One seemed to contain water for drinking, and the other two, oh no, they were what served for elimination, right out in public. That was certain disaster for her. So this was the Franklin Boy March, she thought, as she wondered what she was going to say to the crowding boys. At least this was one of the holding pens.
You!
The largest, meanest-looking poked her in the stomach with a thumb.
You know who's boss?
Not me.
You knew? This your first time?
Yeah, I've never been here before.
Newly pressed?
Newly brought by a highwayman. I've been free, never bound.
Lucky.
John examined the faces. Most, underneath their dirt, seemed unnaturally hard. Village boys didn't usually look as though they never laughed.
I'm Bustskin. I'm boss until somebody knocks me down.
Boss of what?
Here.
Here? It's room?
Yeah.
That's not much.
You want to challenge it?
No, you're the boss.
You sure, Newskin?
Newskin? What's that?
You. When you're new, just ready to be bound. Newskin.
Oh. Yeah, I don't want to fight anyone. I had enough fights before I got here.
Yeah? Who with?
The highwayman and a dragon.
Dragon? You?
And my brother. We both fought it.
Liar. You gonna let me call you a liar, Newskin?
You can lick anyone here.
Yeah. And don't you forget it, Newskin. That's just for being a liar. For being a Newskin. You gonna fight?
Don't do it, John. Don't.
John blinked. It was a red-haired lad she remembered from the village. He was a decent sort. But he had been given up for a tax penalty a year before. His parents and brother and sisters had all cried.
Tom? Tom Yokes?
She had hardly recognized the boy, so changed was his appearance. He had scars on his arms and legs. Both his eyes were blacked.
He did this to me. If I couldn't lick him, then you sure can't. I'm bigger than you and stronger.
Because he was a boy. He had avoided reference to age, knowing they were the same age, so as not to betray her. He was keeping her secret. Slowly, John straightened, letting go of herself. Her stomach still hurt. She hadn't balled her fists, and she knew that with Buskin standing there so eagerly, that it wouldn't be wise.
Tom, can I talk to you over there in the corner?
Tom nodded.
You in, Buskin. I ran away from home. I was caught by someone on a black horse. I never saw a dragon, and I never learned to fight.
Buskin drew back his fist and waved it in front of John's mouth.
I should hit you once or twice for lying to me.
Well, you did.
No, Buskin, don't.
You want some more, redhead?
No. We're going to be sold soon, Buskin. Now's not the time to fight. Besides, you've licked everyone here.
Yeah, I have, haven't I?
Buskin turned and clapped another boy on the back.
Let me tell you about the girl I had on the Finch plantation. She was an overseer's daughter, and she brought us slops. One day, when she came too near and the overseer was away, I reached out and...
As he spoke, he turned again and reached out by way of illustration, grabbing the closest material available, John's dirty brownberry shirt. He hauled in and up, pulling it out of the waistband. The material was too tough to tear, but the jerk did cause her to stumble forward, and as her head came low, he pulled the shirt up over her head, blinding her.
Oh!
John quickly brought down her shirt, but she knew it was too late. They had seen.
I'll be damned. It's a girl!
So I didn't want them to know. It's not so bad being sold as a boy. You don't have to tell.
Tell? Hell! I've got better things to do with a girl than to tell. Give me some of that skin, honey. I don't have to talk about what I did to that plantation girl. I'll show him.
No, if me you don't.
Oh, yeah? Let's just get those pants down.
Buskin pawed at her pantaloons. John brought up a knee aiming for the groin, but the bully was streetwise and twisted his torso to the side so that the blow missed. He caught her raised leg and held it, drawing on the pantaloons, pulling them down around her bottom.
Yeah, that's nice, very nice.
His hand squeezed at her buttocks as he continued to work on the pantaloons.
You can't do that!
You knew her and didn't tell. I'll pulverize you after I finish with her.
When Buskin turned his attention back to John, she let him have a prime smash in the nose. Buskin was hardly fazed. Now the line of battle was at her thighs, as Buskin struggled to get her pantaloons the rest of the way down, and she clung to them to keep them up. Her head thrashed back and forth, her hair flying out, and she kicked her feet, but could not break free of the bully's grasp. Slowly and erratically, the pantaloons came down, until finally they were all the way off, and she was bare-legged. Another snatch, and her ragged underpants were torn off. The watching boys could have been zombies for all the expression on their faces. It seemed that most of them had never before seen the thighs of a 14-year-old girl. She kicked at the bully, then hunched over and butted him with her head. Buskin simply shifted his grip, threw her down, and pinned her to the floor with his body. Now he started working on his own clothing to get the essential section open for business. Then the hulking shape of a guard loomed over them. A ham hand caught Buskin by the collar and hauled him literally up in the air.
A girl, you idiot! Don't you realize that a virgin girl is worth 10 times as much as you on the open market? You know what the penalty is for ruining value like that?
Buskin swallowed. His hands went to his front. He was getting a glimmer of the penalty. The guard dropped him, staring at John appraisingly as she scrambled for her pantaloons.
Definitely prime. We'll get a bonus for this discovery. Come with me, girl.
John really had no choice at this stage. She drew up her pantaloons and followed the guard to the door.
Sir, remember...
Yeah, you did call us.
They'll kill me now if I...
Okay, you get a separate cell. Come on out.
It was the only way.
John touched his hand briefly.
I know.
Then she was hustled off to the section that was the holding pen for the girl mart, while Tom was taken to his solitary cell. She didn't know whether she would ever see him again. The boy mart had smelled of unwashed bodies and manure-coated boots. The girl mart was cleaner, but John feared it more. Boys were sold for work, but girls could be bought for play, and that could be much worse. The boys had been rowdy and rough. The girls were quiet. Too quiet, for it was the silence of despair. John found herself in a dusky chamber where 8 or 10 girls sat, each isolated by her own thoughts. She had endured the impersonal preparations, the stripping by a matron, inspection of her private parts to verify that she was healthy and was indeed a virgin, a stiff shower and scrubbing, and garbing in a rough smock and slippers. Now she stood before the desolate girls of all ages, feeling naked under the smock, for she had no underclothing anymore. She had salvaged one small vestige of her pride, however. She had saved the handful of dragonberries in her pocket by putting them in her mouth. She hadn't needed or wanted those berries. She had done it simply as a matter of principle, to prove that they could not fathom all her secrets or deprive her of all her possessions. Actually, the berries tasted awful, though she neither chewed nor sucked on them. Her cheek had become numbed by their presence, but she had carried them past the gauntlet of inspection and changes, and so they represented her small victory. After all, they could have been gold coins if she had had any to save. She took a step forward and reeled, abruptly dizzy. An older girl got up and came to her.
I know it's rough, honey, the first time. Did they beat you?
John opened her mouth but couldn't speak. Instead, the sodden berries dribbled out.
God, don't tell me are those what they look like?
She squatted to pick one up. Her smock hiked up over her knees, and John saw that she, too, was naked underneath.
They are.
I just didn't want...
Did you swallow any of those?
No, I just...
Grackle! Tanager! Come here, haul her up. Take her to the bucket and wash her mouth out good. Quickly! Maybe it's not too late.
Two husky girls came up and hauled John up by the arms.
But I didn't even swear!
Swear? Who cares about that? Don't you know what those berries are?
No, I just found them near the dragon lair.
Grackle and Tanager got her head down by the bucket.
Take a mouthful and spit it out.
John obeyed and did it, again and again, until all trace of the berries was gone, though her mouth remained sore.
Oh, I guess you'll live. What's your name? Mine's Thornflower.
John. Just John.
We make up our own, to conceal our shame. So news doesn't get round about what happened to us, you know?
Oh, but about those dragon berries?
They're poison! One of them makes a person sick. Two puts her in a coma. Three will kill her. You had a dozen in your mouth. Whatever possessed you to do that?
I'm just ornery. I wanted to hide something from them, just to prove I could do it. And the berries were all I had.
I understand, I suppose. But dragon berries? Of all the things to put in your mouth, why just the juice from their hulls will make you sick?
I know. Now.
You better pick a room and lie down. You need to recover your strength for the auction tomorrow, because if you're sick, they'll think you're faking, and they'll beat you. No malingerers here. Which do you want?
I get a choice.
Any room that has a free bunk, if the other girl doesn't object. We're not boys, you know. We're halfway civilized.
John stood unsteadily and looked at the rooms. They opened off the main chamber, and each had two beds. Girls were lying on some, or sitting on them with their heads in their hands. The accommodations were much better than those of the Boy Mart, probably because the proprietors didn't want bruises or dirt to interfere with the marketability of the girls. In one chamber, a girl sat hunched in a corner, her hands over her ears.
What's the matter with her?
That's Flambeau. She's really bad off. She's a round ear. That's why she covers her...
A round ear?
You know, one of the offspring of some intruder from that other planet. They're pretty much like us, except for those, horrible ears.
Well, I'll room with her.
She won't talk to you. She just wants to die.
John stooped to pick up the berries that had washed out of her mouth.
Well, if he's really do...
Say, that's one tough notion... But don't let the guards know you gave them to her, because...
They'll beat me. No one will tell?
No one will tell.
Thanks. I like it better here than in the Boy Mart.
You were there?
I was pretending to be a boy. Buskin found out and tried to...
The first time's the worst. I remember mine. When I was 10.
You were raped when you were 10?
The first time, yes. By a middle-aged man. He wasn't... Too rough, actually, but he was so dirty and clumsy, I felt like dying.
John glanced again at the huddled girl.
Is that why...
Sure, I thought you realized. She's a round ear, so isn't worth much on the market. So the guards knew there wasn't anything to lose.
The guards?
Didn't you know? No, I guess you didn't. Because they don't do it to virgins, of course. Just to us who can't lose that kind of value.
You mean... You, too?
All of us. Or at least any they want. If we cooperate, they give us little things, like extra rations or clean water. If we don't, well, then it gets ugly.
And Flambeau?
Didn't cooperate. She's new here, like you. She didn't understand.
Well, I guess I'm pretty well off, after all.
Depends how you see it.
John went to the room. She sat down near the huddled girl.
Flambeau?
There was no response.
Flambeau, listen to me. My brother is around here.
Slowly, the girl lifted her head. She had black hair and brown eyes, and would have been quite pretty if the hair weren't matted and the eyes swollen from crying.
Don't tease me.
No, he really is. I'm half round here too, only my ears came out like my mother's when they said you were one.
John stopped because the girl's hands were clamped tightly over her ears, effectively blocking the sound. Well, if she really thought she wanted to die, John would just call that bluff. She opened her hand and put it down under the girl's nose, showing half a dozen dragonberries. Flambeau saw them. She snatched at them, surprising John. In an instant, she had swept up three and popped them into her mouth.
Wait, those are...
The girl lifted her head again. She swallowed.
I know. Thanks.
John had not meant to have the girl really commit suicide. Now what was she to do? Well, she could alert the other girls and have them haul Flambeau to the bucket and poke a finger down her throat to make her vomit up the berries. That would save her life. But to what purpose? If she really did want to die, maybe it was better to let her do it in peace. Her alternative was to let nature take its course. She was in doubt, so she did nothing, which meant the second choice. She did not feel at all easy about it, but that was it. If she was cooperating in a death, maybe that was just the way it had to be here in this awful place. Lunch came. Thornflower supervised the doling out of portions of the rough bread and thin soup. It wasn't much, but no one complained. They were all aware of how readily and capriciously it could be cut off. Flambeau remained on her bunk where John had laboriously hauled her. The girl had a well-fleshed body and would have been a real prize on the market if it hadn't been for her round ears. At least what little she would have brought would now be denied to the owners of the marts. That was a very small consolation. John now wished she hadn't ever shown her the deadly berries. But what was done was done. She reacted as she had when she wasn't sure whether Kelvin had survived the dragon's toss. She went on with her business. What else was she to do? But after about 3 hours, Flambeau stirred.
I'm sorry I gave you those dragon berries. I didn't think you'd really...
I found him.
What?
I found your brother. With the round ears. He's a hero.
Oh, you were dreaming. My brother's a great guy, but he's not really a hero. Just the notion of fighting puts him in a cold sweat. Though he does it when he has to.
Kelvin. He has a gauntlet.
Kelvin doesn't have any such thing. How did you know his name? I never told you.
I was there. I ranged out from my body and found him. He was easy to find because he's the only other round ear in the vicinity. All I could think of was what you said, so I just concentrated on those round ears, and suddenly I was there. He's handsome.
You what?
I went out and found him. I could see him and hear him, but I couldn't talk to him because I was only a ghost. What am I saying?
You swallowed 3 dragonberries and almost died. I guess you could have been a ghost. Oh, but you weren't, because you recovered and here you are. Well, how do you feel?
Very weak. My name is Helen.
They told me that...
My given name. After my round ear mother, Helen. Helen Flambeau.
Oh, well, I'm John. John Hackleberry.
I know. Kelvin spoke of you. He means to rescue you.
You dreamed all that?
I don't think it was a dream.
You mean to say that the dragonberries didn't poison you? They just sort of sent your soul out wandering for a while?
I suppose so. I didn't exactly wander. I could go anywhere I wanted. I just sort of flew. Only I could get somewhere without even flying, just by being there. So I decided to be where there was that round ear you spoke of, just because. Now I don't think I want to die anymore. I got... Something terrible happened, and I really wanted to die, but now I have something back that sort of makes up for it. It's as if I've entered a whole new realm, and what happened in the old one doesn't matter so much anymore. I've left that old, spoiled life behind. Now I want to live and travel astrally again.
Oh, better not. Those berries kill most folk. And if you took too many too fast...
Yes, I'll wait. But now I have something to live for. I want to meet your brother in the flesh. Kelvin's nice. He's my age.
He is nice. Look, Helen, this is hard to believe all at once. I really don't know if you were dreaming or if you really did it. Could you tell me more about my brother?
His eyes are a sort of blue and his hair brown. He's thin. He wants to rescue you and get back some dragon scales, but he got all caught up in being a hero because of the gauntlet.
All right. What gauntlet? He doesn't have any gloves.
He found it somewhere. I came along after that, so I don't know where, but everyone says it means he's the hero of the prophecy. I don't know what the prophecy is, though.
But the berries are poison. Why didn't they kill you?
I don't know. Unless... Did your brother eat any?
No, why?
Maybe they don't work the same on round ears. Maybe they kill the folk of Rudd, but just separate the souls of round ears, because our metabolism is different. Where did you get them?
John explained about the garden near the dragon.
But why would a dragon tend a garden? Do they like to eat berries?
Those few little berries wouldn't feed a dragon for more than a second. They eat hot flesh.
But they must have some reason to tend those gardens if other dragons have gardens. At least that one did. Suppose it had the same effect on a dragon. Made it able to explore without going anywhere. Wouldn't that help it forage for prey?
It sure would. Well, I always wondered why it's supposed to be so hard to catch a dragon. When hunters get together in big parties and try to run a dragon down, well, the dragon's never there. We thought it's because the dragons heard them coming. But maybe...
I think we've just discovered the dragon's secret. No one knew about it because the dragons are able to guard their gardens pretty well, and anyone who ate the berries died. Just as I meant to die, because...
Thornflower told me what happened to you. I'm sorry. I almost got what... Well, the same thing. So I guess I understand. But you know, the other girls seem to have survived it all right.
Kelvin... Would he...
He wouldn't rape anyone.
I mean, would he... Would he be able to like a girl who...
Oh, I'm sure he doesn't judge by that sort of thing. I mean, he knows how bullies are. It wasn't your fault. And I came to you because you have round ears like him. I think he'd really like you, if he met you.
I'm glad, because I think I really like him. He was so confused, but trying to do the right thing instead of being so brutal the way the others are. Unsure of himself.
That's my brother.
Yes. While the others, they don't seem to care anything about... They just use...
Yeah, he's not like them.
But of course we're both going to be sold in the auction tomorrow. If only I could have told him. But I couldn't say anything to him. I was completely invisible and silent. He knows you're here because someone told him, but...
Kelvin will rescue me somehow. I know it. And then he'll get back our gold. And when he rescues me, I'll tell him to rescue you, too. I know he'll want to meet you. And you can help him so much if you can do that thing with the berries again. But suppose they only work once. And the second time they really do poison you.
Next time I'll only take one berry. That's not supposed to kill a person anyway. I'll see if it works. But I think not today. They did leave me rather washed out.
Well, you could be hungry, you know. You missed the new meal.
Oh, I suppose I could be. I'll make sure to eat all I can tonight.
Most of the potential bidders were buyers for the larger plantations. Here and there, on the tiers of seats forming a half circle around the ring, was to be seen a seaman in search of new galley hands. Back where Quito sat, the noise was the steady murmur of men talking crops and the buying and selling of crop hands. Feeling a sliver from the plank seat digging into his squat behind, tasting the bitter bile that always rose in his throat amid such surroundings, Quito retreated into his favorite fantasy. In his mind, the clouds of hatred roiled thick and black as he imagined himself with the money to buy boys for his own purpose. In this favored daydream, He did not have an enlarged and humped back, but instead was straight and tall with a high, black-crowned forehead. In fact, in this vision, he resembled the one he was proud to acknowledge master, Satanas, confounder of righteousness, defender of the ugly and misshapen. At last the auctioneer made his appearance. Standing tall, dressed in black, he was almost the picture of an ancient prophet with his gray, flowing beard.
Some of you have come from the distant kingdoms and might not know all of our rude customs governing the boy and girl marts. Some of our stock have been seized for non-payment of taxes. Others are convicted felons. Most were young vagrants who have been properly and legally impressed.
Quito squirmed, reminded that he too had been a vagrant, though not one a bounty hunter would have taken for sale at a boy mart. As a lad, his had been a hard lot, tormented constantly by smooth-cheeked boys and ugly soldiers, in constant flight from those he knew he had stolen something, eating whatever and wherever he could. In those days, he had to eat, unlike the days following master.
And now, our first lot of 6 boys from the McGregor plantation, used for 1 season and now to be replaced with fresh hands. These still have a lot of work left in them, gentlemen, and seasoned as only McGregor seasons them.
In the center ring, prodded by the overseer's whip, 6 lanky boys with whip marks and protruding ribs walked the circle. The boys were sold to one of the smaller plantations. The purchaser was a man of such evil countenance as to be identified as such even by the approving dwarf. Small lot followed small lot, and soon it was down to single, broad-shouldered farm boys seized for their father's non-payment of taxes. Remembering the torments of his long-ago youth, Quito felt a little, though only a little, avenged. But none of these were quite suitable for master. Quito knew better than to buy any boys that weren't precisely right. He would just have to report no purchases this time.
And now, the girl mart!
Immediately, the lagging attention of the buyers revived. Even those who had no intention of bidding liked to look at the girls. The girls were herded out in their slippers and smocks. Most were motley, not attractive despite their youth and the management's evident effort to get them prettied up. It took more than the combing of the hair and washing of the face to make a hardened young slut into an attractive package. But a few were interesting. One had an excellent chassis and good face, marred only by a stockle cap someone had inexplicably pulled down around her ears. Another looked to be 13 or 14 with good lines, long fair tresses, and a bearing that indicated her spirit had not yet been broken. She was exactly the kind master wanted. The auctioneer hauled a girl out of the bunch.
And what am I bid for this fine specimen of womanhood? Let's start it at 10 rudnas. 5!
The girl made a gesture at him with a finger. She was no innocent youngster. That, of course, lowered her value. The average buyer preferred to degrade a girl in his own fashion rather than wrestle with one who had already been broken in. Quito watched in silence. Finally, the auctioneer brought out the lively young one. Her yellow hair glistened in the sun, and her smooth skin was marked only with a purpling bruise across her face. Her cheeks were healthy and ruddy. She was full of the good red juice of life. Yes, exactly what his appetite craved and the master specified. Either sex would do, as long as it had the right attributes.
And here's a fresh virgin, age 14, just turned in by a public-spirited citizen. She was caught trying to steal a donkey.
I was not!
14 rudnas! Who will make it 20?
There was a pause. This one was obviously worth more, but the buyers were still appraising her, deciding how high they should go. Meanwhile, the girl, looking at the first bidder, did a double take. Did she know him? That could be good for her, or bad, depending on the nature of the prior contact.
Gentlemen, let's get serious!
The auctioneer whipped off the girl's smock, rendering her abruptly naked. The body thus revealed was full-hipped, but still light in the breasts. She was just coming into her prime with some growing yet to do. Her half-defiant, half-chagrined attitude spoke more clearly than any words the auctioneer would say of her naivete. Oh, She was certainly a prize, probably abducted directly from some farmer's house.
100 rudnas!
This was a princely sum, but money was of no consequence to him or to the master. This borderline child would never again be at this stage of innocence.
102 rudnas!
Quito was shocked. He hadn't expected to be bid against at this level. He had made a preemptive bid.
125!
Quito clenched his teeth and hoped the other man wouldn't force him into further embarrassment by bidding again. The girl, still naked, was signaling frantically to the big man. She pointed to the girl with a cap. What was she trying to do? Get him to bid on someone else? Well, the other man could have the capped girl, who was obviously concealing some serious flaw under that cap. Otherwise, the auctioneer would never have put it on her.
125 going once. 125 going twice. 125 going thrice. Sold to the gentleman with a sack of gold between his shoulders.
That was a punished reference to Quito's obvious hump. The auctioneer would not be so frivolous, Quito thought, if he had known him to be an immortal. The next girl up was that capped one. Suddenly, defiantly, she reached up and tore off the cap. Her ears were round. That destroyed her value. No wonder it had been concealed. The auctioneer was furious. Any play he might have made had just been destroyed. There was only one bid for that one, of 2 rudnas, and the big man took her. Well, at least she was cheap. Quito wondered what use the man would find for a non-virginal round-eared girl. No matter how sweet her shape, she simply wasn't worthwhile.